Well, I don't know if you remember as a kid growing up and your parents trying to teach you things. One of the things that parents always try to teach their children growing up are don't talk to strangers, right? Or at least don't go with strangers. And you try to do some exercises maybe to try to help your children understand that maybe not everybody is as interested in they are in their well-being as you would be. And sometimes it's humorous as to how children interact with different people. Some kids are one of those, you know, you need to restrain them because they're always trying to talk to people. Everybody is their friend. And then other kids, it's like you don't even need to look at them twice and they think that, you know, you're somehow some big, bad, mean monster. But those of us who have had children, or if you've been a child, all of us have been a child, you probably remember those, you know, lessons being taught early on. I saw, I stumbled across a funny video channel this week, and if you're not familiar, YouTube is a place online where you can see videos that people post, and some people are starting to get really good at this online video posting thing. They have channels, and they have different different themes to their channels. I've stumbled on one person's channel that they play jokes on people. And specifically, they go out in public and they try to engage with strangers and see if they can get strangers to do things. And one of the things that they did on this particular video I was watching, and I would have showed it to you, but it had some language in it. And I always hate that. I always hate it when stuff I can't show to you, because it would have been so much better if you could have seen this video. But imagine for a second, three young guys, college age guys, standing on the side of a busy city street with signs that said, "Would you like to take a trip to Mexico?" What would you have done? Nope, right? Exactly. And that's what most of the people, actually, they were offering legitimately a trip to Mexico. This was part of the video series to see if they could get somebody to come with them to Mexico for a trip with them, a road trip to Mexico. And as you could imagine, you know, kind of sounds a little shady, all right, you know, from the very beginning. It's like not quite past the sniffer test. So there was lots of people they videoed going back and forth along the city street after they would, you know, reach out to different folks at different points, say, "Hey, would you like to come with us? We're going to go to Mexico. Would you like to come with us? Would you?" Nobody was interested until finally they found some poor unsuspecting person who, I don't know if it was admirable that he was interested or if it's kind of scary, but he jumped in and said, "Yeah, I'll go, and I have a roommate. We'd like to go with you." Most of us would be like, "That's crazy, right?" That's how like stuff gets on the news. You hear people about, you know, that's like a news article later, you know. Young college kid goes on a trip to Mexico, dies, or something like that. Nobody wants to be a part of those stories, and yet, so we understand there's a fear of strangers. And I don't know if you've ever been in public before, and you've had to talk to people in public. I'm not a very good person when it comes to dealing with people I don't know in public. I feel awkward sometimes. I feel like I'm not going to know what to say to people. If I engage with somebody at the grocery store checkout, I'm going to say something stupid and make myself look silly. So I don't always act the best when it comes to talking with strangers in public. Other people, other friends of mine, they're great. They could talk to anybody and it would be like their best friend. But a lot of us have fears about people in public and strangers that people we're not familiar with. Some of that's grounded in reality, going back to when we were children and we understand, hey, you need to be careful. There's danger out there. Some of it's just, we don't want to look foolish. And that's why this story in Mark chapter 1 always gets me. Jesus is walking down the beach one day. Fishing village, Galilee, lake. People were parked on the shore with their beach their boats and mending their nets and getting ready for the next trip out. He's walking up and down. This is new territory for him. This is in his hometown. And he walks up and down the beach, and I'm not sure what led him to choose the people that he chose, but he walks up to two separate individuals, their families, their groups that they were with. And all he says, two words, "Follow me. Follow me." Now, if somebody came up to you and asked you, out of nowhere, you don't know this person, to follow them, what would you have done? Looked at them a little crazy, right? Are you serious? Is this a joke? Am I on TV? What's going on, right? And you need to understand something about what Jesus is doing, really to understand what Jesus is really getting at and some of the things He's asking of these individuals in Mark chapter 1 on the shore of Galilee. We need to understand Galilee a little bit more. In Jesus' day, and if you would go to Galilee today, it would be somewhat similar. Galilee's kind of the back country outside of town. Not a lot going on. Agricultural area. Mostly poor folks. Rural. In Jesus' day, it was a thriving fishing industry. People would have made their living on the shore of Galilee, bringing in boatloads of fish every day. Largely uneducated people. Later on in the New Testament, in the beginning of Acts, at Pentecost, and you got all these people, these disciples that follow Jesus, and they're all Galileans, most of them. And they get up at Pentecost, in the middle of this big city, in the middle of the feast, and they start preaching the message of Jesus in different languages. And there's a comment that's made, chapter 2, verse 7, somebody from the crowd speaks out and says, "Aren't these people Galileans?" In other words, aren't these people uneducated? Why would they be speaking in different languages? How do they know these tongues? Where's this coming from? They had a distinct accent. The night Jesus was betrayed, Peter, standing there and warming himself by the fire, trying to keep an eye on his friend in the high priest's house, getting put on trial. And he's trying to avoid all association with Jesus, and somebody calls him out on his accent. They say, "You're one of them because you're a Galilean. Your accent betrays you." You get the feeling as you kind of overview the Gospels that people from Galilee weren't expected to become much or do much in life, except if you were a fisherman to have a family business to continue living and making money because that's what you did growing up. And in fact, Jesus is calling the rest of His disciples, and John is the only one that records this story. Nathanael sitting underneath of a tree when one of the disciples comes up and says, "Hey, I found this guy. He's from Nazareth, which was also a part of the region of Galilee. You should come see him." You remember what Nathanael says to Andrew, his brother, or his friend? He says, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" The lowest of low expectations. Not exactly the first choice for a group of people that were supposed to change the world. A bunch of fishermen, a religious fanatic, a tax collector, perhaps the rest tradespeople. We don't know exactly what all of them did. Most of them were fishermen, but not a bit of formal education among them. The only formal education they ever received was 3 years walking around with some guy who was a teacher named Jesus. Yet they would kick off a movement so powerful that in Acts 17, in the city of Thessalonica in Greece, hundreds and hundreds of miles away, thousands of miles away from this place in Galilee, somebody will say of those people, the Christians, "These people have turned the world upside down." So what was so special about them? What was so different about these men that would cause them and lead them to do such great things in life? Surely there was something. Surely there would have been a quality or a characteristic or something that Jesus saw in these people as He was trying to get followers to engage in His mission. Let's look at Mark chapter 1 this morning. And I want to, if you're not there yet, go ahead and turn there. We're going to look through the chapter, through the passage 16 through 20, and look at what these guys had that led them to do such great things. Mark chapter 1, verses 16 through 20 was already read, but I want to go back through this and just kind of piece together the story. Jesus is passing alongside the Sea of Galilee. He sees Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And He says, "Follow Me, and I will make you fishers of men." These men left their jobs and their families. We'll talk about that in a little bit more. But fishing was a prosperous job. Sometimes you might have heard people talk about fishing. These men were poor. They weren't very, very successful in life, kind of that thing. Not so. If you read, in fact, later on in this particular passage, it talks about them leaving the servants with the father. These had hired help. This was a business. This was a prosperous industry in this area at this time. These people had money to some extent. It was a hard job, though. It was all season long, probably mostly at night. Most of the stories that we have of fishing in the Gospels occur at night. So it was not good hours, necessarily. But Jesus walks up to them and he says, "Follow me, I will make you fishers of men." Now, to a fisherman, I can't imagine how silly that would have sounded, right? I mean, you've done this your whole life. That's all you know. You know fish like the back of your hand. It'd be like walking up to a farmer and say, "Come here, tell me, come on, follow me, I'll make you herders of men," right? What's a herder of men? Why would you want to herd men? I herd cattle. I deal with cattle every day. I know cattle. Don't tell me how to run my job. And yet Jesus says to these folks, "I'm going to make you fishers of men." And immediately, Mark says this so starkly, so abruptly. He says, immediately they left their nets and followed him. No questions, no explanations. I think I would have at least asked a question. You know, maybe what are the terms of agreement? What's involved? You know, are you providing lunch? are we going to come back here later? Or are we going to get to finish my job? What am I going to do later here? And then it says, he continues on a little farther, verse 19. He saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were in their boats mending nets. And immediately he calls them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants and followed him. This is a family business. They weren't just leaving jobs here. They were leaving families as well. I don't know, there's several of us in the room this morning who have a family business, and it might be something that you just started yourself, or maybe it's something that you've passed down through the family. Your children will get it, or you got it from your father, your mother. Something was done in the family a long time ago that has been passed down to you, a family business. Can you imagine walking away, not just from a job, but an expectation? Your mom and dad's expectation your whole life has been that you'll take this when I'm gone, that you'll deal with this, that you'll continue the family tradition, that you'll pass it to your children, and generations after you are going to keep doing this because this is what we've always done. And anybody that lives in a strong, knit family knows that the expectations can be sometimes stifling and strong of what you're expected to do in your life later because this is what we did. Can you imagine walking away and letting your family down? Their families probably didn't take this too well. We don't know a lot of the details about what happened in the conversations with mom or dad or wives, children later. But I can't imagine that things were just, you know, "Oh, that's great. You know, you're going to follow this guy. No problem. Let us know when you're going to be back in town. I'm going to see you for 3 years, but that's okay." In fact, Peter, John chapter 6, Jesus presents this lesson that's hard to follow, hard to understand. People start leaving him. So much so that Jesus turns to the disciples and asks them, "Do you want to go away too?" And if you remember that story, you remember what Peter's response to Jesus was. He says, "Lord, to whom shall we go? We don't have anywhere to go. We've left everything to follow you." I imagine out of 12 guys who left their families, that some of them said, "Don't ever come back." If that's how you feel, you just do what you want to do. We'll take care of ourselves. Don't want to see you again. They had families. We know at least Peter was married. The very next few verses will tell us that. Wives, possibly children that they left behind. And in our family-first society, this is almost repulsive. Because there are very few things in life that we would give up for our families, that we would deem worthy of giving up. Among Christians, I think this might be the most common idolatrous item among us. And I'm going to tread lightly here this morning because I don't mean to suggest that all of us should just walk away from our responsibilities, our children, our marriages, our parents. No, that's not what I'm suggesting. But I do think that there's something for us to understand about the cost of discipleship and what God requires of His people here. That if these men should have been and were willing to give this up, that perhaps we should think too of our own attachments and what they would lead us to do or not lead us to do. We all get that money, fame, notoriety, a job, a hobby, all these things can be idols. But most of us aren't familiar or even willing to consider that the fact that perhaps family could be as well. But if you read the Gospels, if you read Jesus' words throughout the whole of His three-year ministry, you get very strongly this idea. You remember what He was saying in Luke chapter 14? He says, verse 26, if anyone comes to Me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be My disciple. And before you start tripping over that word for hate, it's important to understand that the Hebrews didn't have a word for like or dislike. It was hate or love. And to hate was to love something less. So what He's saying is to love your family less than Me. If you don't love your family less than Me, you cannot be My disciple. Matthew chapter 10. He says it even more strongly, verses 34 through 37. Don't think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have come to bring a sword, for I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's enemies will be of his own household. Whoever, therefore, loves father or mother more than Me is not worthy of Me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than Me is not worthy of Me. Whoever finds his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for My sake will find it. Jesus' purpose is not to say that He's come to break your family apart, only to say that of all people, of all things, you should desire to follow Him more than. And there are very few things, I think, in this world that most of us deem more valuable than our families. You know, if you have children, you would die for your children, right? You would take a bullet for your children. Most of us would do that. Most of us grandparents, you probably would do the same thing for your grandchildren. You understand the value that you place on the relationships that you hold within the family. And Jesus calls us to this and says, look how much you value this. You need to value Me more. As much as you love them, you should love Me more. Some of us find our meaning and our purpose in our families. Jesus says, I want you to find that in Me. In fact, the Old Testament, Exodus 34, God goes so far as to call Himself a jealous God. Jealousy isn't exactly a quality that most of us would think of positively. But in this sense of the word, God says, I desire your whole heart, your whole attention, everything you are. You know, the beautiful part about this, as believers, if we take Jesus seriously, if we truly love Him above all else, if we follow Him above all else, even our own families, the people that we love and care about the most in our lives will get the better part of us. They will get the better part of who we want to be. I will be a better husband to my wife if I place God in my life above my wife. I will be a better father to my children if I desire a relationship with the Lord above them, even. But it also means that I need to be willing to lay them aside, if necessary, in my devotion to my God. And so I ask the same question again. What was so special about these men? What did they possess? What training, what kind of characteristics and qualities did they possess that fit them for the job? And I'll tell you this, nothing. Absolutely nothing. If you read the Gospels, you find these are flawed men. There wasn't anything special about them. They stuck their foot in their mouths regularly. They had jealousy problems. They didn't know how to follow well. Jesus constantly had to call them back to what they were doing. They got sidetracked. They had short attention spans. There was nothing good about them. They were human beings, except one thing. They were willing to give up everything. I'm sure you've heard this statement before. It's a cliche, but there's a lot of truth to it. God doesn't call the qualified, He qualifies the called. And in many ways, that describes all of us. We've all been called. If you are a baptized believer of Christ, you have made yourself a disciple of Jesus, and you have said, I will follow you. And so there are demands of this relationship that God places on us. And so the question might be this morning, what would you give up? If you had to, and I don't believe tomorrow God's going to call all of us to leave our homes and go to China and become missionaries. I don't believe that's all of our callings. But you should be willing. As a follower of Christ, you should be willing. If that's what it would be, if that's what it would take, would you go? Would you leave your family? Would you leave your job? Were you too attached? Luke chapter 9 gives this conversation that Jesus has with three, I call them would-be disciples. Jesus is walking along the road. He calls three people to follow Him. And instead of the disciples that we're reading about in Mark chapter 1, their response was not as immediate or willing. The first man, he says, follow me. He couldn't take the harsh living conditions. Jesus says, foxes have dens, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay His head. The second, he says, Lord, I want to follow you. He actually says, Lord, I want to follow you, but let me go and bury my father. Remember what Jesus says to him? Whew. This one's tough. Leave the dead to bury their own dead. Come and follow me. And I don't believe the point of Jesus' statement is that we should disrespect our family and not bury them. Jesus knew this man had an issue he needed to overcome, and that was the attachment that he had to his family. The third wanted to say goodbye to his family. All he wanted to do was say, bye, Mom and Dad. And he says, no one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God. Jesus knew the instant that young man walked back into his parents' home, he was staying there. He says, you can't go back. Follow me. What about our jobs? I think about this a lot, you know? We have employment, we have income, it's how we survive, it's how you pay your bills. Monday you're going to get a bill in the mail, you're going to have to pay it. Maybe you already have bills that you should have paid last week. You have to pay them. Nobody's paying your mortgage for you, your rent for you. Nobody's keeping the lights on but you. How do you do this? All of us have possessions. All of us have hobbies. And the question is, would you give it up? Jesus says, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Now, to be honest, 21st century America, most of us are not going to be required to give up family, give up jobs. These kinds of questions are different necessarily for us. But maybe status? What do I want people to think about who I am at work? Maybe I'm hesitant to be bold in my faith enough because I'm worried I might lose their respect. I might lose relationships with people that I love if they find out how dedicated I am to Christ. If I really am serious about my faith, I'm not sure how people would take me. You know? Because there's a tolerable level of religion in our society. But once you go so far, people think you're crazy. And I don't want that. I don't know if I could deal with the rejection. I don't know if I could not get that promotion at work. I don't know if I could deal with that. What do we gain? So we're talking about losing a lot, right? Being willing to give up a lot. What do we gain? The disciples at some point came to the realization that they had left everything and they didn't have anything. And there's this story, Matthew chapter 19, there's a young ruler comes up to Jesus. Says, what do I have to do to inherit eternal life? And he had a lot of possessions. And Jesus says, go, sell all your possessions and give them to the poor. And he walked away sorrowful because he couldn't do it. And again, the point of that story is not to sell all possessions, but to deal with that which is most hard for us. And for him, it was his possessions. He couldn't do it. And Jesus comments afterwards how hard it is for a rich man to get into heaven. And the disciples say, well, what about us? Peter says, see, we have left everything and followed you. What will we then have? What's going to happen to us, Jesus? We spend years of our lives, wasted lives, from most people's perspective. What do we deserve? What are we going to have at the end of this? Jesus said to them, truly I say to you, in the new world, when the Son of Man will sit on His glorious throne, you who have followed Me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And everyone who has left houses, or brothers, or sisters, or father, or mother, or children, or lands, for My name's sake, will receive 100-fold. And will inherit eternal life. The great question that Jesus wants us to answer, and it's the same question that He asked of the people that became His disciples on that beach in Galilee 2,000 years ago. What do you value more in your life? What is most important to you? Is it your relationship with the King of Kings, the Creator of all? Or is it your relationships that you have with people, with your stuff, with your job, with your rapport with others? What is it that you value most? Because it's that I want you to give up. I don't know where this lesson hits you. Nobody's walking up to you, your fishing nets in your hand, saying, follow Me. But there is a call that's placed on all of our lives. God calling all of us to follow Him. And so many times we can be like that disciple. We want to go back. We want to say bye to Mom and Dad first. We want to put our hand to the plow, but we also want to look back to check on things back home. Guys, you just can't do it. You can't do it. Value Me more than that. This morning, if you need to respond in any way to the message, I don't know what this might hold for you, or if maybe today would be the day you decide to make that call, your own call. The road that leads to heaven and inherit eternal life and save your soul. If there's anything you need this morning, we're going to sing another song. John's going to get up and lead us. We would invite you to come as we stand and as we sing.